New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing.
This is part two of the How to Find Good Contractors and Team Members with Greg Hamlin from Trades Coaching. This episode is called Finding the Right Staff Members.
Giving tradies and contractors around the globe the tools to run a modern business. You're listening to Toolbox Talks from the Site Shed. Now here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Toolbox Talks. My name is Matt Jones, and I'm joined on the microphone once again by my co-host in this series, Greg Hamlin. Greg, welcome.
Yeah, how you going, Matt? Glad to be back.
Very well, thank you. So this is part two of the How to Find Good Contractors and Team series that we've created here. First episode, we were talking about how to identify and create the role that can replace us. That was an excellent episode. If you guys missed that, go back and check it out. Greg talked about a matrix, which basically helps you define, I suppose, what task currently exists within your business and where you can potentially be replacing yourself. Also, if you head across to the show notes for that episode, you'll be able to download an example of that matrix. So if you want to get your hands on it, you'll be able to right there. In this episode, Greg, we're talking about finding the right staff members. Now, I suppose this is pretty much a bit of a loaded gun question, but I'm looking forward to hearing what your take is on this one. Finding the right staff members seems to be a bit of an ongoing problem. Well, perhaps not a problem, but it's certainly something that exists out there in the marketplace. And, you know, a lot of our clients and our listeners are struggling with that whole, I suppose, two issues. Firstly, finding the right people for the job, and then secondly, retaining them, which we're going to be talking about in the next episode. So what's your experience, I suppose, on finding the right staff members, Greg?
Okay. So really, I suppose it's a bit like any sort of marketing. If you want to try and pick the best or find the best out there, you really need to do some marketing, you know, mm-hmm. and really it is about, you know, a lot of people do one bit of marketing for for finding team members. It's like, wife's cousin's brother that can't right. get employed. They pick him because they've been referred to him and they end up with this piece of driftwood that's sitting in the business that they can't get rid of and yeah. all that sort of stuff. So if you want to try and find a good one, you know, referrals is good, but, you know, make sure the referrals is a good referral, not just your wife's brother-in-law or mm-hmm. whatever it is. And, you know, marketing, you know, get your marketing out there. So we talk about it in the marketing for businesses for getting leads in your business. Well, the same thing is true for marketing at a staff member. You know, you've got to have multiple legs of marketing out there. You've firstly identified the role that they need to be. So from the first episode, we didn't really get into this, but identifying what their tasks are going to be, you know, what are their tasks that are going to be, they're going to be doing, and write an ad and get some marketing out, and you're looking for ads for work, job boards, you know, driving around and seeing. So if you're looking for subcontractors or sub trades, you know, go to when you're driving around job sites and you see a plumber on there and you might be looking for a plumber, get a half a dozen or a dozen plumber's cards, put them in your teletext or in your file ready to so that when you need them, you can test them out and try them out. But just get as many as you can. Running at, you know, if it's a full-time position, running ads on Seek, the local newspapers, still work to a certain extent. Referrals, just start asking everyone. But it's really about networking and getting the name out there, getting multiple leads out there to get people into the say funnel of getting the right person. And because again, it's really about having a process. Nobody ever sounds as good as they do on a resume. You know, everybody gets a resume and they go, mate, this guy can walk on water. You know, get him in there and you go, this guy would, you know, you wouldn't, yeah, you know, you pick up a hammer and bleed to death. You know, pick up a spanner and bleed to death. You know, they're useless. And so, you know.
What about, Greg, what about, like, okay, so obviously, you know, we're in a position now, especially in Australia, where, you know, there's quite a high demand for trades. How do you go about marketing, I suppose, for staff members in the space of, well, there's so much work out there, there's so little workers. How are you going to market yourself to compete against people that are also looking for staff?
Yeah, I suppose it's really about standing out, being different. It's partly to do with you don't just want anybody in there, and your business shouldn't be just an anybody type business. You know, you're doing quality, you're doing all that sort of stuff that everybody talks about. You really want to have somebody, you know, when you're marketing, you want to put emotion into the advertising or into any, when you're looking for somebody, you're trying to show them that they might start at the bottom, but there's going to be potential for growth. You know, what are they actually really looking for? You're not really looking for somebody if you go pinch somebody off a site for $2 an hour more, well, somebody else is going to pinch them off you for an extra $2 an hour, right? So you want to try and find the right people in this mix, you know, the ones that are they're looking to make a career out of it somehow. And you know, some people are quite happy to be in a stable job. And we talk about profiling. There's a tool called DISC, D-I-S-C, which is DISC profiling, and there's Meyer Briggs, and there's a heap of them. But DISC, I understand DISC, so I'll just explain that one. You know, you've got a dominant person, an influential person, a steady person, and a consistent person, right? So if you're looking for somebody that's going to be loyal and stay there for as long as possible, you're looking for a personality type that's going to be either like an S, you know, really looking for somebody that's got a steady personality. You wouldn't really, and what I mean by that is there's different levels of this in each thing. So DISC, there's a different level there. I, S, and C, there's different levels in it. So everybody's got all four of those in them. But if you're a nosebleed, and what I mean by nosebleed, a high D, then you're the sort of person that's going to be restless and want to go looking for a job and set up their own business and all that sort of stuff. But if you're a high S, you know, you're the sort of person that's, you know, happy to stay there, will do whatever it takes. The old world is a Labrador type thing, you know, you're the person that's going to stay there. So that's why I talk about, you know, having right tools to help hire people, you know, having process for hiring people. You know, there's different roles for people. There's different, there's different roles, and there's different styles of people needed for those roles. So if you're a customer relations type person, you need somebody that's got a bit of D and a bit of I in them, and preferably a little bit of S in them as well. But, you know, I needs to be the predominant because they need to be able to talk to people. They need to be able to relate to people. Where, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen this, you know, you walk up to some people and you just think, geez, they're an arrogant.
Oh yeah.
So, well, it might not be because they're not arrogant. It's because they've got this personality that the D and the C are actually task orientated people. So they're task orientated. They don't care about people. What those people need behind them is somebody like an S, an S and an I to clean. Well, an I doesn't clean up much mess because they're more sociable. But most the S's are there to clean up the mess from the D's.
If anyone wants any more clarification on this personality profiling, I actually did a complete podcast on this back in episode 54. And you can actually, there's actually a test there that you can take to ascertain what your predominant personality type is. So it gives you a breakdown of everything. And it's funny you say that because I have always been that D type personality. And I actually called this the name of this podcast, "Ever Wondered Why You Annoy People So Much?" Because that typically has certainly been my experience in the past. So it wasn't until I actually read this book and did this test that I realized why people thought I was such a pain in the ass. But anyway, it's a fun experiment to take. So if anyone wants that, it's episode 54. You can jump back through the episodes through the siteshed.com/podcast, and you'll find it in there back in episode 54.
Cool. And that's the other thing, you know, like we talk about life's a mirror. You know, I actually had a client that was having problems when he first met. We're doing, he had like 35 complaints a week. He does TV repairs and that sort of stuff. And he was just getting complaints after complaints after complaints. Now, he's a high C personality. So he actually is a task orientated type person, but they're more of the engineers sort of people. And so he was like, well, it takes 2 weeks to fix it. And so there's this whole life's a mirror thing. You know, he gets upset, the customer gets upset, and everybody's like bouncing off each other and all that sort of stuff. Where once I actually introduced him to this and understood that, you know, there's different personality types, he then started to look at it and go, okay, how do I diffuse that? I've got to get rid of my high attitude type thing and start talking to people as humans. And that's why it's important to understand that. You don't want to put somebody that's a high D in front of a customer where they just where you just grunt and groan all over the top of them and just tell them this is how it is and piss off you, excuse me, whatever.
Well, if you do put, I mean, it's not so much a case of not putting them in front of them, but it's a case of those that person you do put in front of them being aware of how to address a different type of person. So that was life-changing for me.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Like that transformed my business, my social life, everything. And to give you an idea, opposites do attract as well. I mean, I'm that typical high D type of personality, whereas my fiance is completely opposite. Like, she's the sort of the calm, cool, collected type. So, and without her, I mean, I am a complete pain in the ass. Without her, I mean, she keeps me in line, definitely.
Yeah. Well, my wife's a high S, nosebleed S, as in nosebleed S. And if you say you're going to do something, if you don't do it, she gets so bent out of shape, you know. So it's just one of those things. You just got to, and I understand that. And I just sit there going, yeah, just get up, you know, just get over it, you know. But anyway, but yeah, just really when you're hiring somebody, when you're looking for the right staff member, really being clear on their role and responsibility, what they're going to be doing. And it's even a good idea to have that sort of stuff mapped out before they start. So you know what their role and responsibility is going to be. Then you can fill that role properly. Try and pick as many people as you can to come into that role. That's why we talk about the marketing side of it. But most of all, hire slowly and fire quickly, right? I had a client in Canberra, actually Coomer it was, and he was sitting there and he actually had a guy that was working display homes, doing project homes all the time. And he actually hired him just before he had to go on holidays. And I said to him, you know, have you running through things? He said, no, don't have time. I'm going on holidays. But 5 weeks, I'm off with a wife. And that sort of stuff. So he just hired quickly. And then when he got back from holidays, I'm going to him, he kept on saying to me, well, one example was he's in his office, in his side office, and he's going, this guy, I just can't put up with him. He just keeps climbing up the ladder, doing one thing, and he climbed back down the ladder and pick up. He said, why doesn't he just take up two or three things with him at one time and do it? And he's just so slow. And I'm going, mate, why have you still got him? Yeah, why have you still got him? You know, it's not his fault. It's the way he's been in introduced to the company. It's not, you know, no KPI set. There's no key performance indicators set. There's nothing really there to drive him. The other thing is, you know, as I said, sometimes you can't fix stupid. So, you know, this guy was one of those plodders that had been on that sort of work all of his life, only wanted to do that sort of work, didn't want to think for himself. He's that high S, but one of those lethargic high S's that don't really want to get involved. And as I said to him, I said, look, you've got to talk to him, set your ground rules up, make sure those ground rules are in place, stop whinging to me about it and start whinging to him about it and start and try and fix it. If you can't fix it, that's that hire slowly, fire quickly. If somebody doesn't make the mustard, cut the mustard with fairly quickly, get rid of them quickly. Don't just hang on to them just because you think you're going to be doing a bit of extra work. You're better off getting rid of them and finding somebody that'll
do
the
job. I've got to say, in so many of these scenarios, and I've been in this situation myself, both on the receiving and the giving end, like it's so often easy to pass the blame off to a staff member. There are listeners out there right now, and they will know exactly what I'm talking about. It's so easy sometimes just to blame somebody for your inefficiencies in the space of not giving them the right tools and the right material they need in order to do that job correctly. So, you know, it's easy to sack someone because they've done something wrong, but at the end of the day, you've got to look at the reason why they've done it wrong. Like, have you trained them properly? Is there a system or a process that they've, you know, have they followed the system and the system's failed them? Like, at the end of the day, it so often comes down to that, having that structure in place in order for them to be successful, and you've got to help them through that. And that's something I'm learning as well.
Yep. Well, that's something we're going to cover a lot more in the next podcast, which because, you know, it's really about how you start them and how you engage them and how you keep them going. And that's the thing, you know, there's got to be an amount of accountability by the business owner as to how they're brought onto the business, you know. You can't just, I talk about, you know, skills versus teachability. You know, I believe you should run them all through a process. And as I said before, nobody's as good as they look on the piece of paper on the resume. They don't look that good, you know. They think they can walk on water. They can get all these great referrals and all that sort of stuff, but nobody ever looks that good. But having this process, go through the process, run them through DISC or, you know, some sort of profiling tool. Because again, people hire on skill and fire on attitude. My opinion is if you can hire somebody with the right attitude then you can teach them and train them anything. But then not only do that, you've got to test them out. They could have the right attitude, but they have no aptitude, you know, meaning that they can't, you know, pick up a spanner and bleed to death. You know, you want somebody who can actually do at least 50% of what you're asking them to do, or more than that. You know, you want them to be able to do they've got to be competent, you know. And there's so many people that seem to get through life. I mean, I did a heap of contracting work in government departments here in Australia years ago when I was in IT as well. And there are so many people just get promoted above because they're useless here. Let's promote them. And I'm sitting with people that are, I can't use the term, but, you know, this you wouldn't feed them. I'll use that term again, wouldn't feed them, you know. And you're sitting there thinking, how the hell, they've got 20 years long service coming up, but they've just been promoted out of their skill. Well, they've got no skill whatsoever. They just sit there getting paid to sit in the corner. And I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I think that's the disconnect there with, you know, larger organisations. You know, you see it all the time. I think that's why as well a lot of the listeners, I mean, most of our listeners out there are, you know, running small businesses or they work in small business. And I think it's such a good opportunity within a small business to like create a better culture. Like it's so much harder to create a good culture in a bigger company. And one of the things, Greg, I just wanted to ask you, I suppose, is that question of, and something that I deal with frequently is hiring for skill against hiring for the right sort of attitude. Like, where do you draw the line there? I mean, I know I've been scenarios where, even back when I had my plumbing business, you know, I'd employ somebody. I employed one guy who was so good at what he did, but he just made my life an absolute living hell. Like he was just so high maintenance, whereas I, you know, had another guy there that definitely wasn't as technically a good a plumber, but man, he just always wanted to learn, had the right attitude, always spoke to customers the right way. Like he was just awesome to have around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know where you can draw the line and the sand on it, but I do know that, you know, I find that if you've got somebody that's got the right attitude, that's like a sponge, they want to learn, you invest some time and effort into those people and they'll end up 10 times better than the person that's got this hands down, got the skill and all that sort of stuff. So, as long as they've got the right attitude, you can 9 times out of 10 teach them to be really skillful. The challenge with people that have got high skill and the wrong attitude, you can't change attitude. It's got to be a snap to change an attitude. It's got to be a snap in their personality. You can't change them. It's like you trying to set goals for me and me trying to set goals for you, or trying to do something, trying to make you do something that you don't want to do. You're not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. You know, it's. I can sit here and talk as much as I want about trying to get something done. Well, mate, 25 years happily married, there's a reason for that. You know, I haven't tried to change it. You know, she's the way she is. She's a high S. I've understood that. She hasn't tried to change me. You know, it's one of those things. It's a case of understanding that sometimes people with great skills, sometimes it's better to let them go because they can cost you more than somebody with the right attitude. In a business where, like you said before, you know, you've got somebody with a really bad attitude, with great skill but a bad attitude. Yeah. Imagine it's like a bowl of fruit. You've got a team of people there and you put a rotten apple, somebody with bad attitude in there, what does that do to the rest of the team?
They all start rotting.
Right, so they all start rotting. So you pull the apple out, you throw the apple out, well, the rot's still there. You've got to actually climb, fix it up. And, you know, you've got to fix the rot that's been set in before another apple goes bad on you. So that's why I say, you know, you hire slowly and fire quickly, because you want to have a team of, you know, good people in there. You want to have a team of people that are motivated and going to grow with your business and be enrolled and involved in your business. So we talk about being team players. You know, you need to have a team. It's all like any game of football or sports. You know, you've got to have a good, strong captain. You've got to have the right team playing in the right areas on the field. You look at what the game plan is. What is the game plan? What's their vision? The vision of a team is normally to win the competition. What's the mission of the team? You know, that's to win the next game. And then what are they going to do? They've got to have everybody enrolled in the team. You can't have people. You can't have a front rower playing in a winger's position. You know, it just doesn't work. The people have got to be on the right position on the field, and then, you know, support risk taking. Get them involved. Get them included. You know, have your team meetings. Like, you imagine a sports team, if they weren't communicating with each other, if they weren't doing team meetings, if they didn't have a coach behind them to help them to grow in that, if they didn't have the captain there making the decisions to be able to take them forward. And that's what I believe businesses owners should be, that inspirational, visionary leader taking them forward. They're the team captain taking them forward, and then, you know, engaging with their team, getting them involved in their positions. And you know, people might throw a wild pass and drop the ball. Don't just pick them up and scold them. Pick them up and pat them on the back and say, okay, well, that didn't work. How do we go about fixing that for next time? You know, get them enrolled in the business rather than being scolding them all the time. Because the problem with scolding people all the time or yelling at people all the time is, after a while, if you keep yelling at them, they won't think for themselves. Exactly right. They don't make decisions for themselves. And they go, then all of a sudden you've got this person that's coming up going, what's next? What do I do here? What do I do there? Instead of turning around and engaging them and getting them accountable and enrolled in their position. And if they start doing that, you've got to put that in, you've got to get them engaged again or enrolled. Then, you know, what would I do if you turn around and ask the question? If they come up and ask you, okay, what do I do next? So what do you think you should be doing next? Or what if I wasn't here, what would you be doing next? Or what do you think I should do here to do this next part of the job? Well, what do you think? Yeah. Try and get them taking their own accountability and being responsible for their own tasks and actions. Because you don't turn around and say to a winger, you know, what should you be doing out there?
That's right.
Like, they know their position. They play the position. And that's where I suppose, you know, you just got to get them ingrained into your business.
What's your take on instead of, I suppose, finding the right staff members, training up the right staff members? So, you know, a prime example for most of our listeners out there would be apprentices. Is it, when we're talking about, I suppose, finding an apprentice, is it the same sort of, do you go through a similar sort of employment process that you would with a regular person or with a regular staff member?
I think apprentices are great because they come as a blank canvas. And the good thing about apprentices is there's, I'm not sure about everywhere else, but right at the moment, you know, there's a lot of positions. Like, you can put an ad in and you get probably 30, 40 people applying for an apprenticeship position, right? When you've got that sort of numbers, and I'll give you an example. We did this. So if you think of, I've got a salesperson, Natasha, that works for me. She started with me. She had no skill in sales whatsoever. She's fresh out of uni. And so you can use the same example for an apprentice. But what we did was we ran them through a process, and it's just a disqualification process. So basically we ran an ad. We had 55 people apply for the ad for the job. The first part of the job was, or first part of the application process was, they had to ring a phone number. And on that phone number, we said, you know, it was a recorded message, and we said, look, leave us some information about yourself. What are your three strongest attributes? What sort of value do you think you'll bring to the team? And it was two questions. There was only two questions on that one. And then what happened was, we went through, we didn't even really listen to any of the things. Anybody that went through and put their name and everything down, we actually ended up sending them an email saying, hey, look, we're doing a group interview next week at such and such a boardroom or a club. And so what happened then was, Natasha was the only one that did it. She actually sent back from the email, she actually looked on the website, found our website, contacted the other girl in the office to find out what she needed to bring to the interview and all that sort of stuff. So she'd actually taken an extra step in the middle of it. And so that got us thinking, when we got to the group interview, why don't we do something different in this one? Why don't we put down, what information do you know about the company? What information do you know about the role? Because we didn't actually tell them what the role was. We just said it was a sales role. And so we then got them to fill in the sheet when they came into the room. So out of 55 people that applied, we sent the email back to all of them. There was 14 people turn up to the interview. They didn't know it was a group interview, but 14 people turned up. So that was kind of a bit of a shock in its own right. We got 55 people applied. We've said, yes, come in for an interview. 14 show up. Okay, so good filter, yep. So we sat down there, and then we said, okay, fill in your details, your name, who you are, and answer those two questions about what the position about and three, what was the name of the company, what was the position, and what does the company do? Natasha was the only one that she had an essay written down. We were wearing our shirts with Builders Profits on the shirt. So we're Builders Profits and Trades Coaching. So we were wearing the Builders Profits shirt that night. Not one of them knew what the company was. And I'm going, you've got to be joking. We're walking around with a uniform on. And so Natasha, there was actually three people that actually got through the whole process. And one of the guys, we thought, this guy looks really good, came in here and he dropped the C-bomb and middle of the interview in front of And so he was disqualified. But Natasha jumped through every hoop. And that's what I'm saying. If you get an apprentice that jumps through all the hoops, you set up a process and get them to jump the hoops. And then and one of those hoops would be, I would definitely, Stuart, one of my clients that does building, one of those hoops is getting him on site digging trenches for the day, right? And he'll dig the trenches beside him. He'll say, he'll have two or three apprentices there digging trenches, and by morning tea or lunchtime, you know, most of them.
Right,
because they don't, oh, this is harder than I thought. Well, mate, what do you think? Well, actually, I was talking to a guy in a workshop yesterday, and he turned around, one of their biggest, he gets him to build a box. You know, he's after carpenters. He gets him, just cut me out a box. Here's a saw. Here's make me a box. And he says, you know, within the first half hour, the guys are going, it's too hard. It's like, what? Idea what to do. But
I love the creativity, the innovation behind what you can do in those instances.
Yeah, that's it. But you know, aperture tests, like I say, having a process, run them through a process, because as nobody's going to say they are on a piece of paper. Apprentices are no different, especially if you can, like I said before, if you can fill the funnel with multiple leads in marketing, if you can fill that funnel of people coming in. And I'll tell you, our ad was actually stuffed up. We stuffed up on the ad. We actually ended up on two places, Gumtree and Seek. The ad that we actually ran in the paper didn't run into the paper. Well, it was a mix up on a system that broke down in our office. But, and so we ended up with 55 out of Seek and Gumtree, which was like, okay, wow. But there's, again, even that was funny. You know, your people ring their phone number and they go, oh, this is effing stupid, and hang up on them. Obviously, you're not the right person for me.
Classic. All right. Well, look, mate, I think that pretty much wraps up this episode. Is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. There's going to be a shortage of apprentices, of tradespeople. I agree with the idea of bringing people in-house, getting apprentices trained up, and take it, again, as a long-term perspective. Be in for the long haul. Don't do a short-term and try and show people that growth, you know, growth within the business. But, yep, no, it's all good.
And that is a wrap. Thank you for listening to another episode of Toolbox Talks. If you're liking what you hear, then you can head across to thesiteshed.com where you can join our community by signing up to our Toolbox Talks. You'll get sent a weekly notification, which is basically a highlight of everything that we've spoken about during that week, along with any other industry news that may be relevant or specific to the trades. If you're enjoying the show, you can head across to iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud where you can leave us a review. That would be fantastic, and all the reviews get read out in the show. Likewise, if you have any friends or colleagues that you think would benefit from the show and the episodes that we create, then please go ahead and share it with them.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Please, if you did, head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Anyway, if you are a project-based trade business and you work in solar or bathroom renovations or kitchen renovations or roofing or something along those lines, and you would like to see some of the results that we've been showcasing in our marketing on for your business, thousands of percent return on ad spend, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 13,000% return on ad spend, please head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. That's tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. It will be well worth the conversation, and I can't wait to chat with you. Ciao.